Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. I'm here with Sarah and our special guest, Nikki Jabor. Hey, everyone.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hello. I'm supposed to talk more.
Sarah and I are two blocks away from each other in Brooklyn, and Nikki is up in Canada.
I am the Great White North. I'm in Nova Scotia.
So what is Nova Scotia kind of like Seattle and Portland and weather-wise, or?
I wish. No, we're very much like Maine. Pretty much what Maine and New York, that what you guys are like, is what we are like. We're zone 5B in Canadian zones. I can grow pretty much the very similar things what you can grow, and we have very much the same maritime weather.
All right. I've never been up there, so I've been to Maine, so I can just imagine what it's like.
Same thing. Rugged coastline, lots of ocean, you know, fog, rain, but it's beautiful.
Cool. I went surf casting yesterday right near the JFK airport. It was really a lot of fun.
Wow, that sounds good. We do a lot of fishing here too. I mean, there's river fishing, but a lot of ocean fishing for mackerel and things like that. It's a lot of fun to get out in the water.
I would love that.
Yeah. Well, come on up. Our boat's going in the water this weekend, so good time.
Oh, neat. Well, anyway, this has kind of been a long time in coming because I've messed up my cable connection a couple of times, but Nikki has a book out called The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener. And I opened it up and I just kind of went, wow, cool. Because there's this kind of gearhead DIY part of it where she talks about ways to extend your season that don't cost a fortune. You don't have to buy a fancy greenhouse. And then the second half of the book is all about different varieties and kinds of vegetables that you can grow and in a short season. And you definitely have the shorter season here.
Mm-hmm. I do.
And it's called The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener. And I really like it. And we have to thank Jean Ann Van Crevelen for introducing us, who's a super neat lady.
Oh, she's fantastic. She does podcasts too. And she's a ball of fire. I love it.
She's exhausting. And I just email her, you know?
She is. And I've had the pleasure of meeting her several times. And I mean, she always wows me. She's great.
What was really cool was I was in the Barnes & Noble in Manhattan in Union Square, and your book was on the featured table.
Woohoo! That's exciting. Well, very unexpectedly, I have to say, it won the 2012 American Horticultural Society Book Award, and the actual award ceremony for that was last week in Virginia, so that was unbelievable that it won that award this year.
Oh, that's
congratulations.
Great.
Thank you. It was very surprising. I had no idea I was in the running.
Wow. So when was your aha moment of you wanting to grow vegetables in the snow?
Well, I mean, I grew up with the same kind of vegetable garden that I think most of us did, the kind you plant in the long weekend in May. You harvest in July and August, and, you know, by early September, you pull everything out that's left in there, and then it's finished until the next year. But,
right.
You know, yeah, but when we got our own house, I'd been gardening, and I'd already studied gardening, and, you know, I'm a professional horticulturalist, you know, as soon as I broke out of my garden many years ago, vegetables, of course, and, you know, I always planted lots of greens, and we love arugula. And one year, you know, I was planting garlic, and I looked over at one end of the garden, and there was this patch of arugula in late October that was still going like crazy, and I was like, that's nuts. I mean, everything else, I hadn't been up there in like a month. I thought it was finished. And
everything else was dead.
Exactly, you know, because I'd planted mainly tender things, and there was arugula going crazy, so I harvested a big bowl. You know, then we had a little bit of snow that night, just like a couple centimeters. And the next day I went up and it was still perfect. So I covered it with an old sheet because I didn't have a row cover back then. And, you know, we harvested until Christmas.
Neat.
You know, that was my aha moment.
And then did you kind of like experiment or read books, or did you have someone around that could offer advice, or was it kind of a gestalt kind of thing, or?
I had no one to offer advice because it wasn't something that many people knew about. But there were a couple books on it, like some published in the 70s and, you know, a couple from the 80s that had information for market gardeners. And I just kind of used that in my own garden on a smaller scale. And I experimented like crazy. I mean, I ordered everything that was considered a cool season vegetable, something that could take spring and fall. And I experimented to see what could actually go into winter for me. And at this point, I mean, we have at least 30 vegetables all winter long. And that's 30 types of vegetables, not varieties, because, you know, we have at least 6 or 8 kales
right.
at any one time in the winter garden, and lots of lettuces and spinach and different types of arugula. And so, I mean, there's dozens and dozens of things up there, even in the middle of winter. And as you said, Eric, I I mean, we could have gone fancier for my season extenders in the book. I could have made really expensive cold frames and, you know, really nice glass greenhouses. But I'm a gardener. I'm cheap. I want to do things the simplest, easiest, you know, way I can. And that's why my season extenders are simple and often made from recycled materials.
Oh, that's cool. What I also like in your book is that you show some kind of DIY garden season extenders that your neighbors and friends have done as well, yeah. Which I think has a neat kind of, it just shows that, you know, you're not the super expert. There's other people out there that are doing the same thing. And you know, there's not a big skill set here.
No, it's just opening your mind to something new. It's just like considering a whole new, you know, harvest season. And one of my neighbors uses she goes to yard sales and she collects punch bowls for like $1 or $2. And then she uses them as cloches to protect her peppers and tomatoes in the spring and fall and even lettuces and spinach, little clumps of them. And a lady about an hour from me has a mini hoop tunnel and a couple cold frames. And she extends her season with greens and root crops and a whole bunch of things. So, I mean, there's lots of people, I think, on a small scale, especially Europeans, because they've known about some of this technology for many years.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been very inspired by them, and I'm always trying to learn more, of course. I mean, who isn't? And since I wrote this book, there's probably at least 4 or 5 more vegetables I wish I had included, for goodness sakes.
What's the most surprising plant that you've been able to get to grow, not maybe not through the winter, but a longer season than you had expected?
Well, I think everything was surprising to me at the beginning.
Yeah.
My gosh, that's a hard question. I'm just so excited by it. Like, one thing that really introduced me to is the fact that, like, I was a fussy eater as a kid. You know, I'd eat yellow beans, which are kind of a maritime Canadian thing, yep. And I would eat potatoes, and that was it. You know, so as I gardened, I ate more, obviously, and learned more. And as I extended my season, I discovered things like tatsoi and mizuna and mash or mache or corn salad, you know, and a whole bunch of different things, claytonia, things I'd never heard of before. And now they're our favorite vegetable. So I think it really opened my eyes to just a world of different flavors and textures.
I try and grow mizuna, which is a Japanese mustard, everybody, and yep. these little flea beetle bugs attack it every time.
Yep. Your best bet for that is actually to wait a little later to plant it. Some people plant that, you know, quite early. And if you plant in a cold frame, you'll be fine in like February, March, if you're seeding in a cold frame, no yep. worries. But if you're planting in the garden in late April, early May, you're going to get flea beetles unless you crop rotate really well and use a really lightweight, you know, insect barrier fabric over top. But if you wait a little bit longer, their life cycle is often done, and then you can get a nice flea beetle-free crop.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, I learned something here.
and you know, the thing is, their little holes are tiny in the leaves anyway. They don't hurt. They don't damage the plant that you can't eat it.
Right.
I've actually heard of some organic gardeners that prefer it that way, because when they're served that at a restaurant or if they see little holes in it, they know it actually has been grown organically.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
Because then you know, I mean, there's this whole thing about the food has to be beautiful and perfect.
No.
And yet if it's imperfect, then you know it probably hasn't been sprayed with some bizarre chemical.
Exactly. And, you know, up here in the Maritimes and many parts of Canada, we're organic by law. So I can't go spray poisons on my garden anyway. I can't even use weed and feed on my lawn. So we are organic. And so everything I talk about in the book is organic because that's just the way it is.
You Canadians are so smart. I wasn't going to do the Canadian impression. So.
I do it all the time. It's not an impression. It is true. We say A all the time.
You know, this is also hard for, I have a friend who's a new farmer, and she's struggling with when her produce has, you know, holes or other types of damage in it, you know, should she sell that at a reduced price or, you know, so I think it's kind of a hard balance when the consumer doesn't always, you know, share that same perspective. It can
That's
be challenging.
Signs come in handy too. Look, grown organically.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I think if it was beets and turnips and things like that and the leaves had minor damage, I don't think she should reduce the price. But if she's selling something like kale as a leaf crop and, you know, there's obvious damage there, perhaps.
Right.
But if it's not, I mean, if it's not damage that's, you know, going to actually take the quality of the product down, then I just think we have to open our minds a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, I told her, I said, if it doesn't look unappetizing,
that's
I was like, once it starts to look unappetizing, then maybe keep that for yourself. But, you know, some holes here and there, who cares?
It just becomes a compost opportunity.
Yes, yeah.
Wow, we're going to talk more about that. The whole idea of food that is imperfect is actually better for you. Neat. So Me being the guy that likes to build stuff, I like a lot of your cold frames and things. But what I was really appealed to me was if people want to start out really simply trying to extend the season, either in the late winter, early spring, or in the fall, is you can use some bales of straw or hay to kind of build a fort around your plants.
Absolutely. There's nothing like a straw bale cold frame. And I don't know any gardener that ever says, gee, I have too much straw. I mean, I use it in the pathways of the garden. I use it to mulch my potatoes, my tomatoes, a bunch of things. I use it in my composter. So I can never have enough straw, but I get the bales, you know, and sometimes if you've had a bale of straw, you know, it's going to sprout up a little bit, like some weeds, some straw weeds. Not a big deal, but if I use it as a straw bale compost or, you know, or a cold frame first by surrounding some kale plants or leeks or something, and then I top it with something hard like a piece of polycarbonate or an old door or an old window, then any weeds in that straw are going to sprout, and then by the time I use it the next season, you know, it's pretty much weed-free. So it's a good way to reduce your straw weeds, season extend, and cover your tall vegetables, because in a regular cold frame, it's kind of low profile often, and it's hard to thin. You know, it's hard to fit in the tall stuff. So a straw bale cold frame is much taller, and you can grow collard greens and the kales and the leeks and stuff like that easily.
Sarah, when you worked on the farm, did you guys use things like that, or?
Yeah, we did. We were actually pretty good in the season extension category. We had a lot of ours were a little bit higher tech just because we were doing it on a much larger scale, but we did like caterpillar tunnels, like plastic covered tunnels, and we had a high tunnel which was big enough, like much larger, like probably 30 feet by 100 feet, and it was amazing because this high tunnel, so it's just this simple structure covered in plastic, it would be literally freezing cold outside, and you would walk in there on a sunny day and it would be 85 degrees.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, you'd walk in from the, you know, you'd be in the snow and then you'd walk into this beautiful, like oxygenated, you know, highly oxygenated room just full of greenery. It was amazing.
And you can almost, even in the wintertime when I lift my cold frames, I feel that. You almost feel like it's spring, you know, because it's green, it's beautiful, the soil's mostly thawed, and it just smells like spring, even in the middle of winter.
Right, yeah. And we would do, I think what another thing that's helpful is doing the double layering. So you have this high, you know, this plastic covered tunnel. And then for maybe some of your more tender crops like lettuce, if it starts getting really cold, you can put, you know, some row covers in underneath of the high, in underneath of the tunnel.
Yeah. And that's fantastic for a market garden. It's hard to use in a smaller backyard garden, but there are times I do that on my mini hoop tunnels too. Give it an extra layer, like the row cover, like you say, and it just helps extend your season even further.
I loved reading your book, too, because it really opened my mind to some things that you can do when you're on a smaller scale that you can't do on a larger scale. Like when you're talking about cloches, like that's not really something that's practical when you're growing thousands of heads of lettuce. But, it, you know, if you're just growing a smaller number, you know, you can get away with that to just feed your family. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And anything can be a cloche. My goodness, a large jar. Even if, you know, if we're going to get a frost, a bucket will be a great cloche. It doesn't have to be clear to protect from frost. Mm-hmm. You know, it only has to be clear or opaque if it's, you know, if you're extending your season for a couple weeks or a month or so with it. But yeah, anything can be, even a piece of newspaper folded into a fancy looking hat makes a great cloche for protection. I can't do it, but I know people who can.
Nikki, if people want to just kind of get their feet wet with this, first, of course, they should get your book, The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener. But can you suggest some plants that people might want to start early in the late winter to start extending their season?
Oh, yeah, my goodness. And your latitude is very similar to ours. So generally, I start seeding in my cold frames any empty areas that I've, you know, winter harvested, generally in early February, once our day length stretches above 10 hours, because that's the time, the magic time when the plants are going to start growing again. So, you know, I usually scratch in some worm compost into any empty areas, and I start seeding things like spinach and arugula. I love tatsoi. It's one of my favorite vegetables, like a salad crop, and it's amazing green. You can start.
Me too.
Do you love it? Isn't it great?
I love tatsoi. I was like, she has a whole section on tatsoi in her book. That's awesome.
I would have gone for 20 pages on tatsoi if I could have. It was wonderful. I love it. And I mean, it doesn't actually even really need the winter protection, but it's just easier to harvest when it's not under a foot of snow.
Yeah.
You know, so I would start with some of those really easy to grow things. And in February, and you'll be eating them by, you know, late April. Endive is extremely hardy. The winter lettuces and the cool season lettuces are really hardy. I would try a few things you haven't tried before, you know, experiment a bit, and then grow things that you already do like the lettuce and spinach and arugula. Most of us are familiar with that. or get a salad mix, like a mezcaline mix, and plant that frame. Yeah. Oh my gosh. In February or March, and you're going to have just the most wonderful homegrown gourmet crops you can imagine. Delicious.
Fedco Seeds actually has a couple of salad mezcaline mixes, and they're timed for the seasons. They have an early spring mix and a summer mix in that, so people could try that.
I love Fedco. The problem with Fedco is they don't ship to Canada.
No.
Isn't that cruel? It's terrible because I drool over their catalog. I circle everything and then I close it and put it away. Oh, well.
We could smuggle them to you. My problem is I always overthink the start date on when I should plant things in my little, I have a little greenhouse or under some grow lights, because then I think, oh, I'm going to screw up the frost and they're going to grow too tall and that. I mean, maybe that's more a therapy thing than just a talking thing here, but.
Well, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, they want to know exactly when they have to plant their lettuce, exactly when they need to put their carrots in.
Yeah, I want to know that.
I'm not that rigid. I'm just kind of, you know, I know I'll start putting things in early February, and some years I'm putting in lettuce and spinach and arugula, and some years it's tatsoi and mizuna and maybe an Asian blend or some baby kale seed for some, you know, baby kale greens. You know, I just kind of go with the flow. I find if I get a little, I'm not that organized generally, and if I try to overthink it, it's not as fun for me. You know, so, and I'm always trying new things too. Like this year, there's a new type of arugula that came out called wasabi arugula, which is amazing from Renee's garden. And it's one of my new favorite crops for this year.
Oh, fun.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
My arugula bolts in like 3 minutes.
You know, I find it, and I have arugula right now in the garden that's doing phenomenal. But the key is I haven't planted it right now because it's warm. It's 22 degrees today. I guess, what's that, in maybe 70 to 75, 78? Yep. And, you know, it's planted in partial shade. It's underneath pole bean teepees. It's beside
smaller
tomatoes. So I still grow some of those cool season crops in like early and mid and late summer, but I put them where there's more shade and they do really well. So you got to make sure. And if you plant them too early in the open garden, you know, like some people seed it in March and all of a sudden we get a hot stretch and that causes them to bolt because they're just trying to survive. So you want to make sure you do plant them at the right time and then pray to the weather gods.
Well, cool. I love it. I really I want to build a hoop house similar to some of the pictures in here.
Awesome. I hope you take pictures, you know, and document it. That'd be great to see.
You know, actually, some of the most popular Garden Fork videos, we have a YouTube channel. The most popular one is how to build a grow light, for some obvious reasons. But
yeah. I'm going to share that one right away, actually.
But there's a hoop house you have on page 71, which is brilliantly simple. And I looked at that and I was like, that's a Garden Fork project. And it has just simple PVC pipe with a wood frame and a door. And it's tall enough that you can walk in the thing.
And that door is also used for ventilation, you know? So there's one at either end. Because when you have a tunnel, of course, the longer it gets, the harder it is to ventilate. So you want to throw the doors open at either end of that, for sure.
You just slipped in a little Canadian thing there, I heard, you know.
Did I?
You said, you know.
You know.
What's that, a boat, eh?
Well, I'm going to build that. And, you know, of course, we will credit you in the video. As far as I've just been using regular plastic from the home improvement store, is there any reason to get the UV-stable greenhouse kind of plastic?
Yes. Now, if you're making mini hoop tunnels, you know, over like the low ones that are only maybe 2 or 3 feet tall over top some of your vegetables, you can use whatever. Because, I mean, but I do often go to my supply store for greenhouses, and they often have dented rolls, and I'll buy those because the 4-year UV stabilized plastic will last at least 6 to 8 years for me. And if it's dented, I get a nice little price break. But if you're putting up a polytunnel, you do not want to change that plastic every single year. That's a lot of work. So I would highly recommend, you're going to spend twice as much, but it's going to last 4 to 8 times as long.
So your dollar goes longer there then.
It's much better price per square foot. Yeah. And in terms of, you know, extending your season, a walk-in polytunnel is definitely the best way, cost per square foot, of extending your season. Absolutely. But for somebody just starting out, I would recommend one simple cold frame and start playing with that. And I mean, it's just such an easy, fun way to extend your season.
There's another one in here that's built out of conduit that they look like they used a conduit bender for. And then there's another one that uses concrete reinforcing wire as well.
Yeah, that's fun. I use that even over top of my cold frames to keep the deer out when the cold frames are open. Or sometimes I just use them even, you know, I use them to extend the season in the wintertime over top of some of the beds. But even sometimes in the summertime over my carrots and stuff, if they're not in the protective fence from the deer, because, I mean, the deer are such an issue up this way, as I'm sure they are in your region too.
Yeah, deer happen. So.
Yes, they do.
All right, cool. Sarah, any questions or?
Well, you know what I was just thinking about the other day is during the fall and winter here, I get this really fabulous light in my apartment. I have an apartment with no outdoor access. I don't have a balcony or anything. And it feels so warm by the windows. I'm wondering if I can grow some stuff inside, but right by the window, if I'm getting really good light.
You could totally grow things, you know, microgreens, like baby salad mixes. I also love to grow shoots. I'm not a big sprout person in jars, but I get the sprout shoot seeds from some of the different seed suppliers. And then I grow them in like an inch of soil in shallow trays. And, you know, within about 4 days to 2 weeks, depending on the type of, you know, vegetable we're shooting up. I mean, they're wonderful to add to wraps and salads and stir fries and sandwiches.
Oh, that sounds great.
They're so good and they're so fun. And
what's your favorite kind of shoot?
I like broccoli, I think, and kale.
Oh, okay.
And radish and arugula.
And right, keep going.
Yeah. All good. I mean, and you can grow like lentils as shoots and different crunchy bean mixes as shoots and sunflower shoots that you pick them when they're like 4 or 5 inches tall and pea shoots, of course. They take a couple weeks, but it's worth the wait for pasta or a stir fry. I'd also try herbs. You know, I can never get enough herbs, and that sounds like a good spot for some herbs in your windowsill.
Excellent.
Yeah. I'm getting hungry. It's almost lunch here.
I know. It's not almost lunch here and I'm still hungry.
That's good.
We're doing a job down near Greenwood Cemetery and there's a bodega that has a little lunch counter in the back and I'm going to have what's called a pork semita. So I'm thinking about it right now.
That's the problem with talking about vegetables. You start to get hungry.
Yeah. I want to eat pork. Yeah.
No, whatever.
All right, cool. So is there somewhere online, Nikki, that people can find you?
Yeah, nikkijabour.com. Just nikkijabour.com. And that directs people to my blog, as well as Twitter and stuff like that, too, which I'm constantly posting photos and tips and odd happenings that occur in my garden.
And your book is for sale on the site as well.
It's not for sale on the site, but it does direct people where they can buy it. I mean, you know, Amazon, all the different online bookstores, as well as pretty much all the brick and mortar bookstores across North America, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, support your local bookstores.
Exactly. I can't emphasize that enough.
And you're on the radio, right?
I am every Sunday. I'm on www.news957.com from your time, 10 to noon Eastern time. Every Sunday, it's going to year 6.
Wow.
Oh, yeah,
you speak so much better than I do. So
I do not. I do not have a radio voice, but I've been told I have a face for radio. But that doesn't sound nice.
Based on the pictures I've seen of you, I would not make that statement.
There's just some very nice garden photos in here. Let's just say that, all right?
And the photographer for this book, Joseph DeSois, he was a trooper. He took awesome photos. He came up to Nova Scotia 4 times to photograph this book. And one of those times involved a dislocated shoulder and a trip to the Canadian Emergency Hospital System. So he was a pretty good sport, and he took awesome photos.
Well, at least your medical care system works. So
Yeah, and you know, it took 20 minutes, and he was in and out. He was well drugged up and happy.
That's fun. All right, cool. Well, thanks for taking the time here. I have to apologize for the technical problems on my end, but I blame the cable company. So
I would too. No, thank you so much, Eric, and thank you, Sarah. I really appreciate it. It's been so much fun talking to you guys.
All right, everyone. Yeah. So there you go. You can find us on, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on, I've stopped listing all the social media sites. I just say whatever's been invented recently, you can find us on.
Smart.
And thanks, Nikki. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Nikki. It was great to talk to you.
You too. Thank you.
Garden Fork Radio is available on our site, gardenfork.tv, on iTunes, and now on Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about Stitcher at stitcher.com. And our background music is licensed from uniquetracks.com.